Hello, everyone. I would like to welcome you to my home. This is the Gingerbread Man. I am stumbling over my words a little bit. I'm here with my friend today. His name is Dorian. We are here to discuss a whole bunch of cool topics. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm just dandy.
Just dandy?
Kicking it.
Like a dandelion?
Would you eat dandelions?
Are you kicking cans?
Answer my question.
I would eat dandelions.
They're good for your liver.
I've heard.
Really good for your digestive tract.
You can get greens at Sprouts.
You can eat them before they bud out, and they'll be less bitter.
Huh. Really?
Sauté them with onions and garlic.
Are they better with or without dog shit?
Try to avoid the ones that have been pissed on.
It's like snow, then. I can see. So, right off the bat, what do you think of meditation?
I think meditation is a very resourceful tool. I don't think it's utilized as much as it could be.
Utilized in what way?
As in, you know, like people smoke weed, people self-medicate, you know. Us in the West kind of just don't meditate. We don't take time to just kick it.
It's an opportunity, a space.
Yeah, I think it's underutilized for sure. It's like a tool in a toolbox. You know, you have all these different things that you can use to like go about to your day or your life. And meditation is just one of those ones that you instinctively should like pick up, you know, like every day. You know, it's like you look in your toolbox and you make sure you got, you know, like you got your meditation, you got your fucking good eating if you eat good, or your exercise routine or whatever fucking routine for that matter. It's just one of the...
It's like brushing your teeth.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that should be done routinely, in my opinion. You know, it's like putting on a pair of socks or...
So let's try to define it.
Define meditation.
How would we define a meditative moment?
Like, for a layman?
Yeah, for a layman. Like, somebody who's never even thought about it before.
Defining meditation, probably would say, like, living in the moment is, like, as simple as it can get.
Present-mindedness.
Yeah. Mindfulness, I guess.
Mindfulness. That's a buzzword.
It is a buzzword. People don't use it as much as they should. Underutilized word. Like being mindful, you know, like I have to remind myself to be mindful. And it just like goes hand in hand with meditation, you know. It's like you can't step into the moment without looking at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, and like that's how I would define meditation.
Is looking at the moment.
While you're in the moment.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man. I like it. And you can do that anywhere. Like, we can do that anywhere. Everybody can do that.
Literally anywhere. Like, when I was going through some pretty intense EMDR therapy.
What is that?
Let me pull up the correct...
EMDR therapy.
Yeah, just so we're clear. This is kind of relevant... Not really. I won't dive into like my life situation. EMDR therapy stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So basically you have a point. I don't even know why we're at this point, why we're talking about EMDR.
Let's do it. Let's get into it. I have absolutely no idea, so educate me, please.
So basically, when I went through EMDR, basically it's teaching you to be in the moment of a traumatic memory.
Okay.
So the simplest way that I've seen it put is like, let's say you had a bee sting when you were like 2 years old, and then 15 years down the row, you have an anxiety attack because you see a bee. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because you got stung.
But you might not even remember getting stung.
You don't subconsciously remember getting stung, but something happened.
That's heavy, bro. That's heavy.
And so these are why these things happen, you know. And so I saw a video, like there's a video on YouTube, you can Google it. But it pretty much demonstrates the process of going through like EMDR. So they start off with like a stimulation of sorts. It could be audible, it could be visual, it could be physical.
Like a fidget spinner?
Yeah, just whatever, like, gets your attention in the moment.
Oh, it snaps you to it. Like, yeah. Like reading a recipe. Like when you're reading a recipe before you have to cook something, you have to go through 1, 2, 3, 4. And I always find myself going through it procedurally, and it always blocks me in a step. And that's like the first step is figuring out how the fuck am I doing shit. Mise en place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically they get you in like a meditative state, get you comfortable, you know, and then they ask you certain questions, you know, like produce the image in your head of what you think is this traumatic memory. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to be breathing on it. But there's steps like beyond this, you know, like you have to like build the positive groundwork to do that. So in order to build the positive groundwork for EMDR, you had to like essentially meditate. You had to sit.
You have to notice what you're noticing.
Noticing what you're noticing. You had to sit there and create like a space, like a happy space is what my therapist called it. And essentially you are going to a space where you cannot be harmed. You have an ally there.
I like that word.
Yeah, it's nice. My ally is a big old bear, big old mama
bear. Mine's an octopus.
Hell it's yeah. Like, you tentacles.
Remember, my hair?
Yeah, like ventricles and like all this random fucking shit sticking to you.
Yep.
Yeah. So back to the
EMDR
shit. They ask, this is the groundwork. You build the groundwork. So when you're going into EMDR, you have to go through a couple different sessions. And essentially, you build the groundwork before you dive into the post, like the traumatic shit, mm-hmm. you know. So for my situation, I was dealing with the death of my grandmother and my aunt. My grandmother, I wasn't specifically there to see her die, mm-hmm. but with my aunt I was in the room. I watched them pull the cord out and her life literally lived out of her body.
Man, I could not imagine that.
It was brutal. And this is the EMDR that they wanted me to target. So basically we built the ally, right? We're meditating. Like essentially I go into my therapist's office every week. 30 minutes we spend, you know, just like in my zone, you know, like I think about like my strong suits, like what I need to bring into the safe space to make me feel comfortable, you know, so that way when I dive into the actual traumatic memory of processing this EMDR. So let's take a step back. I haven't even explained what EMDR does. So when you're doing EMDR, you process memories in your frontal cortex, or you hold memories in your frontal cortex. Mm-hmm. That's where traumatic ones stay. I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong, probably speaking out of my ass.
I'm always confused about the archaeology of the brain, but I do know that the hypothalamus or the hippocampus, one of those two might have something to do with memory. Don't quote me. We are not experts here. But so memories are stored in the brain, and the prefrontal cortex is known for emotional responses and for logical responses as well.
Yes.
which is kind of the counterintuitive thing that people don't really think about, is that we're logical creatures. We have to be able to intuitively think things through, and that's what makes us human. But we also have these emotional reactions too, and people think that's the animal brain. But our memories are emotional, you know?
Yes.
So there's all these convolutions. So we're going back to EMDR and memory storage and the prefrontal cortex.
Okay, so you hold memories in your brain, correct? Traumatic memories are stored in the front of the brain. And with EMDR, I might have the processes of this mixed around some way, because it's been about 2 years since I've done it. But essentially, you're moving the traumatic memories from part of your brain to another part of your brain physically. Mm. With stimuli and guided meditation.
That's interesting.
And so basically you run through an appointment, you know, like you go through like two or three like different like foundational building of this EMDR session, you know, like you're amping yourself up each time. Mm-hmm. So that way you can like emotionally handle what you're about to deal with. And it gets so visceral and surreal, like really quick, because you know, like you spend 2 or 3 weeks kind of just like, okay, building a safe space. I fucking got an ally. I got some nice traits that I like of myself. That
you
I'm
feel powerful.
Feeling powerful. And then you get into the actual nitty gritty.
Thinking
you know,
about the hard stuff.
Thinking about the hard stuff, you know, like here's, now it's time, you know, like I remember when I did it. When I would do it, I would hold vibrations in my hands. I would feel it in my hands, and it would stimulate my brain because I'm holding stimuli in my hands, and it's vibrating every couple seconds. And then in my head, you know, like the neurons are firing off because that's what the therapy is designed to do. So essentially you're bringing the memory back into your conscious and you're living in that present moment. Whatever traumatized you, you're back in that moment.
So back to the B. So in this situation, if we train ourselves with the EMDR, at least the way I hear it from you, next time we see the B, if we're training ourselves to recognize our memories, to at least look at our memories, to go through them and do these conscious efforts using the physical world and all these other strategies to entangle them back into us, next time we see a B, we don't have to freak out. We can say, oh yeah, I remember that B, and I'm gonna cautiously go around.
Yeah, literally.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so basically, like, you put yourself back in the moment so that way you can react differently. Mm-hmm. Because the way that my therapist put it is called regression. People learn how to deal with their emotions at certain states in their life. So if you didn't mature properly and you had traumatic things happen to you, what's going to be your trauma response? It's going to be your trauma response that you had 10 years before because you weren't taught how to handle your emotions properly.
Or you just continue to react that
way. Yeah, you know, it's a habit, you know, and you build it up, you know. It's like EMDR is like consciously breaking that down, and it's violent.
Yeah.
Like the after effect of like physically moving the memory so your brain can process it not as trauma but as like a memory so you can move on. It's very powerful, but little did my therapist, like, she told me, she warned me, she's like, some of the side effects, you know, like, can include like irritability, insomnia, mm-hmm. Mood swings, you know, but it mostly takes place when you're sleeping. Because she definitely laid out a warning and she said it could be sexual or it could be violent.
Hmm.
Like the dreams, you know, like I could have like a wet dream and cum myself or like I could like fucking feel like God and kill a bunch of people and be violent.
Or somebody was hunting you?
I chose the angry route and I remember this dream vividly. So basically like the memory I was trying to process was seeing my aunt pass in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I was very close to her. I called her my Nini. She's my godmother. That's just Hispanic, you know, things. Like, I call my godfather Nino, you know. So, like, it's a very specific kind of bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's my aunt and she's my godmother. You know, like, we're fucking tight. Our family was close, you know. Like, it takes a lot for me to, like, talk about this shit nowadays, you know, because I did go through that therapy to deal with this.
Well, good on you, man. You're a strong dude for carrying it.
I wasn't for a while. We'll get to that. But basically, in this dream, I envisioned myself murdering somebody. Like, I saw it. Like, I was viscerally, like, I felt it, you know? Like, I don't know if you've ever had a dream where, like, it felt real.
Yeah.
Like, to your bone, like, where you woke up and you're like,
did you hear my painting bullshit?
No.
Oh, okay. You first.
Okay. So basically, when you sleep is when the EMDR actually works. It's when your brain is actually processing it for the first couple days. Excuse me. And that's how it processes it, is through your sleep when you enter REM sleep. So that way it can actually like go through the works in your brain. But yeah, it was a very violent, gruesome memory, like, not memory, but it was me processing my anger because I felt very confused and very angry that my aunt died prematurely.
And that's part of
we're
animals, man.
Yeah.
Like, what did we do when we were attacked in prehistory? We defended ourselves or attacked. There has to be a part of our being that has that in us,
right?
You know, like, why do you think there's so much horror? Like, I love Stephen King. I like horror, you know, like, right. I like true crime. I'm a very mild person. I've never hit a person, ever.
Right.
You know, I'm a very mild human being. You know, but there is a part, and like, and even going back to like, so when people were hung, you know, like decapitations, which were very common, we're talking about hundreds of these things, they were treated as public events. There were some hangings in Russia and throughout Europe like back almost like 1600s, 1500s. Don't quote me on specifics, but a lot of these would have thousands of people showing up from other towns and sometimes other countries. Like, they would write about it in the tabloids like a movie, this amount of attention on this gruesome act of a death act, you know? Like, but the mob mentality or whatever, you know, like there's the id, the shadow, you know, there's part of humans that is drawn towards that tension and that frustration, I think, you know, and especially in your subconscious and your dreams, I think that could happen, you know.
Oh yeah, well, and it manifested too, like, that was me processing those emotions though, you know. It's like, I didn't give myself a chance to grieve, mm-hmm. you know, like, I haven't told many people this, you know, and I don't really care, you know, about the circumstance anymore, because like, I'm past it and I've learned to grow. But when she passed away, I had just gotten a job like a week before. Mm-hmm. I went to work that night she passed away. I didn't give myself any time to like grief or like go about business as normal, you know, like that's what I thought at the time I needed to do, you know, because with my grandmother, I did give myself a little bit of time and I sunk, you know, so I was like, well, maybe I'll change it up, you know. But it was within a year that my aunt died between my grandmother.
That's rough.
You know, so it was super rough because I was super close to my grandmother too. And just getting over that, you know, and then a year later, my aunt passes away, her daughter, and it was devastating, you know, like it earth-shattering, fucking devastating. Like, I can't overstate that enough, you know. I'm overusing that word, but that's what it was. Mm-hmm. It destroyed our lives, you know. Like, I didn't know what to do, you know, but I chose to go to work, and that was probably the dumbest thing I could have done, you know. Like, I don't regret it, because like, some of my best friends that I've ever met in this world that I still talk to 5 years later, you know, like, came from that job that I went to that night. You know, I could have called off or just quit, like, not even gone. You know, I was still living at home at that point.
It was also a little bit of glue to hold you together. That normalcy in the day.
Yeah, no, that's what it was too, because like, I had been studying grieving techniques, you know, and it's like, stay on course, you know. It's like what I read, you know, like, they wouldn't want you to go off kilter because they died. It was the mentality I was having, but little do I know, you know, you need time to grieve and process.
That's weird. It takes a long time.
It does, you know, but like, those initial days after somebody like passes, you know, you, if you need time to like process what is going on, then take it, you know. Like, that's
really, really important advice,
right? It is really fucking important advice, because like, I tore myself up over it, you know. Like, I didn't want to. I just drank, you know, like, that job that I was working made it really accessible to drink on shift. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was doing, you know. Like, I was grieving and I was drinking on shift, and I wasn't pleasant, you know. Like, you can talk to some of the people that I know from back then, and they'll tell you, you know, like, yeah, Dorian was rude. He was like kind of a slob to be around, you know. Like, I wasn't pleasant, you know. And it's like, that was one of my vices, one of my grieving techniques. Because I didn't know what to do, you know. Like, grandmother just, I was 22 when my aunt died, you know. And like, my grandmother, I was 21, you know. So like, it profoundly affected me at such a young age, you know, because like, I thought I knew how to handle death. My dad died when I was 12, but coming back, you know, like, realizing that I don't need all of that shit, take time to grieve. Like, no matter what, if you need time to grieve, take it. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day.
What can grief teach?
Grief can teach you to be more respectful of the life that you live.
And how about its relationship to love and how much we love others?
Teach you to profoundly love deeper. Like,
yeah. It makes it's,
you know, like, kind of like Ram Dass says, be here now. You know, like, be here now. Like, right fucking now.
Yeah, and meditation.
You know, like, stay in this moment, you know, because you never know when it's going to end. You don't, you know, and like, having that feeling ripped away from you is probably one of the worst feelings you could ever experience. Like, I've been through bodily pain. I've been through emotional strife with like, relationships and like, friendships. but nothing does it like death. Mm-hmm. You know, it really like it centers you. It's cerebral almost.
There's a space that we make during meditation, but there's also the space that we hold as ourselves. You know, like I feel like I like you carry space. You know, you have an import, you have intent, you have an effect. You know, you do things, you interact, you react with your environment, and like all those interconnected webs that you touch throughout your day, even to strangers. You know, and then that's our space that we kind of inhabit. You know, whether or not we really travel that far along the globe. You know, like how big is the fucking planet anyways? Like, and like we've been in our little city for a while. You know, and like, how often have we been able to skip out to a different state, you know, let alone another country, and think about all those geographic distances? Like, we're really not moving around much, but the space we inhabit is that import to me, you know, that affect.
Like an ambiance almost, you know, it's like a mm-hmm. aura you give off, so to speak, yeah. You know, like.
And that's what I miss. And I haven't lost anybody in my family yet, and I'm grateful. Yeah. And I don't know how I'm going to react to that yet. But the biggest thing that I miss when it comes to is like when my friend Dave passed, I missed talking to him, you know, right. You see him on Facebook, you know, like you lose friends to OD, you know, and I've lost so many friends from high school because of filthy habits. And then, you know, they like, it's such a weird practice to have some of these Facebook profiles open, I feel like, because it right. fucks me up when I see somebody's Facebook profile that I know is passed.
Right.
It messes me up pretty bad. But the weirdest thing is that, like, it's all those interactions. It's like, I miss being able to talk to them. You know, I miss right. being able, like, you know, like, all these things, like,
it's literally they left little bits and parts of themselves with you, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, generally, you know, like, when you see somebody, when you crave somebody, it's something about them that you miss. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's the laws of attraction. You know, like, whether it be intimate or just platonic, you know, like, love. Mm-hmm. You know, like
unconditional or conditional.
Yeah, dude, it's just I forgot where I was fucking going.
No, we'll try to lasso this in, like.
God fucking damn it!
That's where we get. But oh man, what was I even saying?
I don't know. Look at the paper, bro.
Let's do this. Let's go on to some Buddhism. Tell me a little some more about Buddhism, man. You just Oh yeah? Fuck it. Yep. So tell me a little bit about Buddhism. Pick something simple. Pick an idea with a parcel. You know, like a little package that you think is cool. Do you have like a cool package that you'd give somebody about Buddhism that has affected you?
No, because I have a bad fucking time remembering things.
What is the basics of Buddhism? How would you paraphrase it?
How would I paraphrase Buddhism?
Yeah, just in your own words, with absolutely no commentary from me. Well, a slight.
Oh, this is good week. Okay. So Buddhism. It's like trying to center yourself. If you had no outside knowledge or commentary, it's like trying to like put it poetically, but I'm not very poetic when I'm high.
You do really well, man. You give yourself some credit.
Let's see. It's the art of sitting back. Like, I would say, obviously, Buddhism is a way of life. Some would say it's religion. I am non-denominational, like, through and throughout. I don't even claim atheism, agnostic, any of that. It's just a way of thinking, man. You sit down and
What is Buddhism's relation to the self? And what is
it? Is all self.
What is like, the importance of the self?
The self is like, if you can't have a good center on yourself or can't think positively about yourself, then everything else around you is going to crumble. In my opinion, because that's the heart of mindfulness. You have to be thoughtful of everyone around you. Your action has a reaction, you know, cause and effect.
And yin and yang. You can have a good action on people too.
Oh yeah.
You can lift people up.
It's karma, you know, they call it karma.
Well, karma is I always found karma intrinsically bound to Tao. So do you know, you spend some time with the Tao, I think?
No.
Okay, I'm going to force you to take a Tao with you at some point. I'll buy you one. It's a really short book. You can read it in 30 minutes. So in the Tao, so the basics of the Tao, you have nature, which is kind of like heaven. It's kind of, or they're kind of interchangeable as nature and heaven in my mind. And then you have humanity. And then that's also denominated by the yin and the yang, whereas yang is heaven and nature, and then the yin is the weak, the human, the receptive, you know? And so within Tao, the main principle that I drag from Tao is that life is in a constant, ever-present change, and that whenever anything reaches a limit, it has to go back. When something fills up, it has to go back. When something gets too hot, it has to cool down. When something gets too loud, it has to quiet down. You know, within the Tao, there's this duality. And there's a lot of other ideologies that I like that are non-dualistic, that do not have that up and down aspect.
Right.
But within Taoism, that's intrinsic, you know?
Right.
So with the self and Buddha, damn it, man. I had a link to the Tao, but I'm just going to go off on the fucking Tao now. Anyways, so
so to circle back, sorry to interrupt
you. No, please do. I lost myself.
To circle back, I believe that Buddhism, regardless of all of its nomenclature and
all its monks, all the monkhoods,
all the different sects,
denominations
of Buddhism, you know, like they're all pretty much pointing towards the same thing. They're all doing their own different thing though.
Yeah.
It's to look inward.
Yeah.
To aspire to be a better person tomorrow. You know, thinking forward.
How about attachment?
Attachment? It depends on how you look at attachment. Because what I've learned from Buddhism is that humans place emotions onto things just naturally. That's what we do. You know, like we're very communal and we're very materialistic. Like that's just how we are. We've evolved this far to have nice things, you know, like that's just how it works.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as like material comes, you know, you can just like, I've learned to just not attach myself towards things as much anymore.
That's what the Buddha taught.
Just because it's less stress, you know, like.
Well, like we were speaking about earlier, like attachment for me, what I dragged from it and to connect it to self is that we have the sanctity of who we are. You know, my center, my space that I inhabit, that I do all of my effects on, you know, and all these things that I interact with and all the material objects that you mentioned, you know, all these things that we've been able to create with our reason, you know, like maybe we got it now, yes, but a lot of people, if you're not looking at the history and even imagining not having it and growing up with it, then there's this entitlement to the material that just seems inherent. And I think that's a dangerous idea. And I think I carried that idea for a long time, was that if I can always find something to make me feel better or whatever, you know, in that aspect to the material world. And so with attachment, you know, like anything I interact with, I can interact with it and hold my sanctity of who I am. Whereas I'm interacting with this thing, but I don't have to be attached to it. I don't have to bind myself to it. I don't have to say, this is what's making me happy. Right. So like when I feel anxiety, like all day today, I was having a lot of tension within myself.
Right.
And you know what? One of the one things that comes into my head over and over and over again is this little remindering voice in the back of my head that says, "Hey, you know, you're carrying this anxiety. You're carrying this feeling. This feeling, you're carrying it." You know,
right.
Because the first instinct that I used to say was, I am unhappy, I am mad, I am sad, I am this, you know, I am this idea of suffering or dukkha, you know, like, but that's a falsehood. And I think that's what the Buddha was teaching, is like, we don't have to be that suffering, we don't have to be attached to it in that aspect, if that makes any sense. Like,
it does.
But
I'm also really high.
Well, of course. That's how you get the brain juices flowing.
I feel like it slowed me down and made me forget.
All right.
As soon as we hit the weed, it was like, oh, fuck, what are we talking about? God fucking damn. All right, no, I'm asking the questions now, bitch.
Okay. I think we've gone through most of it.
Fear, Buddhism, yoga. You didn't touch on yoga.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on food?
I think food is probably the most important, one of the most important things other than human interaction and love that there is in our lives. Like, when you look at our bodies, we are this meat suit. You know, did you know that we get about a third of our water from the day from our food? We get a lot of water from food. Like, our body depends upon the food we eat. So if we, when we stop eating, if we fast, we have to drink a ridiculously larger amount of water when you're fasting, like equivalently more because of the lack of food. So a lot of people are fasting actually end up dehydrating themselves because, you know, it's like this weird thing. You can actually, if you're eating fruits and watery foods, you don't even have to drink water if you're eating enough, you know, you're getting water, you know,
right.
Like food, like our bodies depend upon these things that we put on them. And it incurs a tremendous respect as well, I feel, because anything that we're imbibing into our body, whether it's plants or fungi, which are my favorite, like the lion's mane, or like animal products like meat, you know, all these muscle fibers or what have you, like, doesn't matter what life form it is, that's an incredible sacrifice every single time we eat. You know, and so going into Veda, do you know anything about Vedanism?
Like,
Vedantism?
Like Ayurveda?
So Ayurveda is a style of eating. It's Ayu is, I think it's Veda is knowledge. And then Ayu, okay, don't quote me. I didn't write anything down, so I'm not even going to fucking go into that. Veda is knowledge. So the Indian Vedas are just this incredibly huge amount of different types of just things that the Indians have been writing down for a very long time. A lot of it's health-based. They have a very scientific mindset, you know, like they've always been very geared towards figuring out. And so when they're looking into consciousness and looking into like how to meditate and whatnot, it's a very scientific approach when you really look at it. Aristotle would be proud, you know, like, but so within Veda and food, what was I saying? Damn it. What was I saying about food? Dead air. I need to put some sound effects in here. Just like some, like, so
it's
I got a really good train when it's going, man. Like, all right, so we have this tremendous sacrifice when we put food into our bodies, and I think that deserves respect. And as a person who puts food out, I am a cook. I cook for children. I work at a daycare. I think I couldn't imagine, like, when I got into this facility, the woman who owned the place offered to pay me to go to school to be a teacher, because she saw how good I was doing with the kids. She's like, let's get you in a classroom. And I didn't have the heart to tell her that I didn't want to be in there. Like, I don't care. I don't care that I'm minimum wage. I don't care if the cooking position is under-respected. You know, everybody in that place thinks they're more important than me, and I'm the hardest working person there. You know, and that makes me feel good about myself, you know? Like, but cooking, for me, and childcare is very important as well, rearing other people's children, but that's another convoluted, but everybody needs food. And I love being able to provide people food and being able to put a little bit of my impact into the food that I give to other people so that they can eat it, and knowing that that's gonna nourish their body. Like, that's incredible to me, you know? Like, And I love it. I think food's very important. And I think we should all be focusing on what we eat. Jazz hands. I had a really cool thing to say about Veda, and it's bugging me. So one of the cool things that I can remember about Indian Veda is that we have this inner sun in the middle of the day. And so you're supposed to eat most of your food in the middle of the day when the sun's high. And that actually links to our body temperature as well. Our body, we have a spike in body temperature in between like 10 and 2 p.m. usually. And so usually that's when I get hungry and cranky. And so the Vedas would say to eat as much as you can in that time period. Like, eat while the sun's high. Eat a very, very, very small dinner. Try to go with very little food, which is something I fuck up every night because I struggle with eating food right before I go to sleep, and then I'll fall asleep with food in my mouth, you know, just because I'm just like, watching TV, eat, you know. But the nights that I have not eaten before I go to bed for hours, like 4 hours before bed, and just stop eating, you know, eat a good dinner and then stop and just be structured, you know, and that's hard. That's real fucking hard. It's one of the hardest things I have to do, you know. Right. Like, right. But you'd be surprised about how good you feel in the morning,
right,
and how well you sleep, you know. And like, and then just listening to my body right around 10 o'clock, that's when I get hungry. And I can eat a lot at that time period, you know, and like, it's just interesting, you know. And then breakfast is, of course, very important. You know, you need to put something in your body because your sleeping is work too. You know, your body's working while you sleep for 8 hours.
Right.
You know, like, you need to put something in when you wake up. That's important. Pachow. You got anything to say to that?
No.
You like cooking too. What do you think about cooking?
I think cooking is essential.
Yeah. What do you think about the art of it? How does cooking good food make you feel when you get to sit there and you get to know that you're making something like the creative, when you don't even know what's going to happen
yet? Well, see, that little sweet spot that you just talked about, that's a word, and it's called gastronomy.
Oh, gastronomy.
Gastronomy.
Do you use a telescope for that?
No, you use fucking knives and fucking pans, you doofus. But basically gastronomy is the art, the science of food. Like, it's like food science. And that's why I think that it is an art. It definitely should be like more respected. I'm not saying that food isn't, because there's some very fucking like very, very good cooks out there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my like idols, I would say, like, if I had any idols, would probably be some chefs. You know,
well, they're badasses. When you see a chef in a kitchen, man, even on TV, like, even fucking the big names, like, what's his face? The white hair.
Oh, Hell's Fieri? Kitchen. Hell's Kitchen. Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, dude. I know, he's highly publicized. And that's a total character.
What are you? An Indian sandwich?
I was sitting there with my sister one day watching that Hell's Kitchen show with her. And I look over, I'm like, man, I'm so jealous. He's like, oh, you want to be the guy yelling? I'm like, no, I want to be that guy getting yelled at. If he could yell at me, you know how good that feels? Right. Like, fucking yell at me, bro. Right. Like, give me some knowledge, bro. Like, dude, I have very rarely felt a respect for another human being, like, for a chef, where I'm just like, holy crap, you impress me.
Like, don't get me wrong, I've worked for some pieces of shit.
Yes, that too. But like, I've also met some really good fucking people.
Oh, I have too. Some of the best people I know I met in a kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's killing me that I can't work in a kitchen right now, because like, food is like so ingrained into my head. Like, I'm 26, and what day is it? It is the 9th as of this recording, and I will be 26 in 3 days. The 12th.
Holy crap. I gotta get to you and tea bag a fucking birthday present. I forgot his birthday. I feel like such a douche.
Rest in peace. But I have been cooking I've been in food industry since I was 16 and cooking since I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I practically, like, that's all I know. You know, like, this new job that I got, like, it fucking sucks, because, like, it's not what I want. Like, at all. You know, and it's like, I love, in the height of my culinary career, as one would call it, I respected the food I put out. It looked fucking phenomenal because I fucking was there, like, putting it together, you know? Mm-hmm. I knew how the recipes worked. I knew how to make it, you know, like, from scratch, you know? And it's, like, that's something I can take pride in, you know, knowing that I put out food that not only that I would eat, but that people did eat in large amounts, you know? So it's just like food is, it's so communal. It's, I'm going to overuse this fucking word, but it's visceral, you know? It's like fucking, it's cathartic. Yeah. You know, like getting to sit around a fucking
the dinner table,
the dinner table, or even the process of making dinner, or fucking
having
people over to fucking enjoy dinner with you. You know, it's an experience. It's something like being meditating. You know, like circle back to meditation. You know, and it's definitely something that hits that spot in your heart that you feel when you are meditating. You know, and like that's the meaning of meditation: living in the moment and enjoying that fucking moment.
Yeah.
You know, to wrap this all up and like fucking put a cherry on the top, that's what meditation means to me, is like being in a moment and enjoying the moment for what it is, you know, seeing the beauty in the moment instead of just like letting the beauty pass you by.
And it's easier to do when you're doing something like cooking.
Yeah. It is, you know, but like when you can finally sit down and be like, hey, this food is banging. This whole restaurant's popping.
Yeah.
You know, people are vibing in here.
And it makes an atmosphere.
When
you have a good food place like that and people come to you, it's like kind of like a soapbox.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But a soapbox for the tongue.
Yeah.
A tongue box.
You know, and like granted, I wasn't the one like pushing out fucking the food, you know, I was like a glorified fucking,
it doesn't matter.
Assembly
it's
line.
A good kitchen is like a scene where you got all the Vikings and they're like
rowing in unison.
Pull, oh yeah, pull, because one fucker is not pulling, that whole boat's gonna go one other direction. Right. Everybody's gonna get,
well, see,
gonna
here's get the thing up, though, like in the specific job that I'm recalling in my head as we speak, like the best like cooking job that I've ever had, it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of it, you know. It was like it was just me. That's how I know
me too
that I can like pull off something in the future, you know, where I can like make some money off some food, you know. Like I just need the finance, you know, because I ran that shit, you know. Like I know how to prep, I know how to fucking
order
food, I know how to run a shift, you know. Like I know how things work, you know. And it's like
the only thing you gotta figure out is infrastructure, capital, equipment.
Yeah. You
know, all the stupid
overhead
head cases.
Overhead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there. You know, and it's like getting past that hump, you know, like it's like meditation, you know, like you fucking spend so long watching your fucking thoughts pass by.
Or not even noticing them at all. Or just identifying with them and saying, I am upset.
Yeah. You know? It's like you got to take the leap over and like grab on to whatever the fuck you want,
yeah,
and make it so, you know. And that's exactly how cooking feels to me, is like
you gotta hold this knife. I love it. I love it when I'm having a fucked up day and I don't have to cut cucumbers. I'm like, oh fuck yeah,
right.
It's so good.
Well, and it's like there's so many different parts to it that can be meditative, you know. And it's like within it, it is an art, you know. Like anybody can fucking do it. Cooking is the easiest fucking thing to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should be taught it.
It just makes me sad when people don't even care. Like when, like, one of the saddest things I can think of, and I eat out.
Right.
But one of the saddest things I can think of is somebody who eats out primarily. And I'm not dissing on you, and I'm not shit-talking. This is not a criticism. It's just that if I was in that position, I get so much enjoyment out of knowing that I procure my food. You know,
right.
Like, and if I could, like, I grow it all and knew where what animal shit came from, that would make me even feel closer to it, you know. Like, that's an important thing. Even if you're eating simply, you know, even if somebody's out there eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, it's much better to make your own PB&J than buy one from King Soopers.
No doubt.
Yeah, like for that huge surcharge.
No doubt. You know, and it's like being in poverty has definitely shown me the light of respecting what you have.
Mm-hmm. When you can get nice things like lion's mane.
Yeah, you can have your near tropics and fucking do kratom.
Grill it. All right, buddy. Let's wrap it up. I gotta get you home.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming. I'm really grateful for you speaking with me, and I hope everybody, we could all just learn something from you.
Okay.
So thank you, buddy. Bye.